Inside Outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now,
we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now,
we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun. Our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, I'm all right. How are you this morning?
Good, John. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. I enjoyed the visit.
Absolutely. And I just want to tell the folks that it's 50 degrees, so it was kind of chilly last night.
I thought it was quite brisk.
Yeah, but I didn't mind it too bad. I had the windows open, and today we're going to have a high of 78 degrees. We're looking at a slight chance of thunderstorms overnight. And a little bit tomorrow, it looks like about high of 72. And then this week's going to be pretty fall-like. We're looking at 67 on Monday, 69 on Tuesday, and up to 74 on Wednesday. So it'll be a nice week to get out there and enjoy the outdoors, maybe do a little fishing. Don would always say, it's a good time when the water temperature starts going down. I don't have that data right now, but I will in a few minutes.
Well, I know the river has lowered quite a bit over in Owen County, and we really do need the rain. I hope it does more than just sprinkle.
Oh, yeah. And also, I just did want you to know that this is WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana. We're volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And you know you can listen if you miss us every week or once. I don't mean every week or you'd miss us totally. But, come on in and to WFHB.org or InsideOutdoorsRadio.com, and we do a podcast of our show every week. And, we're starting our fun drive right now. This is the Inside Outdoors show, and WFHB was created as an alternative to commercial radio. It allows a variety of volunteers and like us to create the programming that you listen to on a daily basis, and we need your help here on Inside Outdoors. We try to let you know all that's going on in your community and the outdoors and about safety and what's happening in the out there and how the conditions are. And so if you like what you hear every Saturday morning, we invite you to become a new member, a contributing member of our WFHB community, make a contribution. If you're already a sustaining member, we thank you and invite you to renew your membership by calling 812-323-1200 right now and keep those frequencies diverse and commercial free. We have a goal this hour of having a couple of new sustaining members and or brand new members is what I'd really like to have. And so if you get a chance and you like our show, it doesn't have to be much, but you can set it up as a returning thing where each month it comes out of your bank account, or you can just make a one-time donation. But either way, we really would appreciate it here on Inside Outdoors to keep us going. So there you go.
Well, Rich, there's a lot of diverse programming in this radio station. There's some things I listen to every week, and some things I just catch now and then, but it's a very diverse programming.
Well, absolutely, and we have a lot of really cool programs. Besides the music that you'll hear, one of the cool things about WFHB is that we have volunteers come in and they can kind of decide what they want to play. You're not getting what some record company or whoever in the industry wants you to play. We kind of do what we feel is good music, and that's just the music end of it. As far as news, we're award-winning. We've been doing a lot of this reporting on local community and how it affects the state and the nation, and you'll see a lot of that also throughout the week, and also our community affairs programs. You know, the neat thing about that is we have, we got Ola Bloomington, which is on Friday night, late afternoon, you know, early evening, and that's, you know, Spanish-speaking. There's also, you know, just a bunch of really great programs. I mean, I could name them all, but it wouldn't really matter that much. Just we're the example of the one that you want to think about right now because you're listening. And so Inside Outdoors, we started this way back in 2002 with Buddy Bill and me and then Don Jordan a little bit later. And Don's been writing about the outdoors since, 35, 40 years ago. He's the one that broke the story about the Westinghouse and the PCB problem. And amongst many other things, he's just been an advocate for our wildlife and everything. And so it's really fun to have this history right here on the station. So please give us a call, 812-323-1200, if you want to keep these shows happening.
I really appreciate Don Jordan's background and the knowledge he has about the outdoors and hunting and fishing. He's a excellent reference.
Yeah, and he'll, you know, the amount of knowledge that he has is amazing. You know, I'm interested, and I talk about stuff, but I swear if I don't know something, he's already got the answer. So he's been doing this a long time.
Yes, he certainly has. I read his columns many years ago.
Yeah, and he's on his way in here, so anyway, we'll be talking to him directly, but... Anyway, it's a beautiful day today, and again, enjoy it because it's going to be a really beautiful week, and this is the time to get in the outdoors. When I said it's time to go fishing, it really is. It's a time when the everything gets a little bit more active when the water temperature goes down, and we're really looking forward to some beautiful days, and October's typically one of my favorite months here in Indiana. How about you?
Yeah, I love the fall. The only thing I've got against fall is it doesn't last long enough.
Yeah.
it's the best season, I think. It just happens to be about the shortest. I just hope we don't dive into a real harsh winter.
Right. Well, I don't think we will, but you never know.
I know. I don't know.
Of course, I saw some sneak previews of the persimmon seed, and that's always been what... Buddy Bill brings up, if you know the story behind a persimmon seed, if you split one after that, and they got to fall down on the ground first, so they're ripe is really what I mean. If you cut it open, you'll see a knife, a fork, or a spoon. And depending on the way the inside of the seed looks, is going to pretty much tell you the way the winter's going to go. And unfortunately, we got a spoon this time, so that means...
Oh, that's not good.
That means... and not necessarily cold, but maybe some precipitation in the way of snow. So we'll have to see about that.
Well, my copy of the almanac, which claims to be the original almanac, I never know whether it is or not, but my copy shows our state being damp, but not necessarily snow-covered, and it shows us being cold, but not necessarily frigid. So I can live with damp.
Well, yeah, I can live with damp. Usually we get that one sort of Arctic blast from Canada right in around February,
yes,
and sometimes even January. But usually you can almost count on it's going to be February.
Yep.
Same way you can count on that July or... you know heat wave that we that we tend to get, you know, where it's 100 yeah. degrees, or either that or it's below zero. So I don't like that, but you know, at the same time, the fall weather's, again, it's just so incredible. I was lucky enough to go out to McCormick's Creek State Park earlier in the week, and it was just gorgeous out there. That was the night that it kind of turned over. That was Thursday night, and it was just starting to get a little cooler. But boy, it was beautiful, and it didn't get too cold. It was just, you know, that perfect temperature when everything's clear and you can see the stars, and just gorgeous.
I don't think the leaf color is going to be as good this year because of this dry spell.
Right. Well, we talk about that sometimes, about just the whole idea of, you know, what causes that. And I suppose when we get a lot more rain, but we did get a lot of rain, I mean, in the spring. But
yes.
So I don't think it's going to be too bad, but I definitely can see some signs of a few trees changing. I was out at Don's place the other day, and he's got a few that are just starting to look a little bit, you know, you just see them. Little dots of color.
Right. Well, it's time for them to start, and we won't know till they get into it how it's going to work out. But I've seen a lot of leaves falling in my area, and that usually has to do not necessarily with the amount of sunlight or anything. It's
right.
Just dry. And I think we're losing a few more leaves than normal right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least we haven't had too much in the way of wind and rain.
No.
Which usually knocks them right out.
Right, right. We've not had any real terrible storms this year at all.
No, and I'm hoping we still don't.
I'm with you on that.
But, you know, I was... We've been talking about birds.
Yeah.
Don brought up species that we see every day have suffered great losses. And
right.
I've been looking up on some info on that. And they say more than 2.5 million birds are down, including sparrows and blackbirds, warblers, finches. And I've been kind of looking around and watching for that. I just want to kind of tell people that, you know, this would be the year... And from now on, to get those bird feeders out there, it's a beautiful thing to do. It's wonderful to see the birds come to your backyard. And if you don't have one, they really need some help out there.
Yeah, Don kind of got me inspired to get to thinking about that, because I'm kind of dilatory about my bird feeder just when I think of it. But I'm trying to keep it on a schedule now. Because I agree with what you guys are reporting. I'm not seeing near the birds. And it surprises me that sparrows and finches are getting knocked back, because that's one of our toughest birds.
Yeah.
They survive about everything.
Well, even the red-winged blackbird, which is,
yeah.
you know, sort of our staple bird around here, has declined dramatically.
Right.
And, so again, if you can, there are some things you can do, and one of them I didn't really think about, but I read on, and that is cats. You know, we tend to allow our cats to be out there, you know, and this gets back to spaying your animals and everything else. But, you know, an overabundance of cats out there in the wild also really affect the bird population. So if you can, like at critical points of the year, you know, keep your cat inside or find a way to curtail its activities a little bit. I know that's a really hard thing, but that's, you know, it's harder to say what to do about it other than to say, you know, spay and neuter them. Don't let's just not have a lot of feral cats out there.
I think the feral cats are still a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about a cat is such a good survivor. It
yeah.
doesn't take any time at all for a cat to go basically wild and then show up at somebody's house and get a free meal
mm-hmm.
and then disappear again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and they're all over the place. We had a little, I think, let me see, we had a mom and four kittens we found in our backyard that somebody let that other cat free, it's out there, adding to the whole problem. And unfortunately, there's more of that than really should be.
I've got three cats, but they're all neutered, and two of them are 13 years old, so they don't get off the porch much.
Right.
And I never see any bird feathers or even a dead mouse hardly on the porch anymore. They used to bring me something if they caught something.
Right.
But I don't think they do much of that kind of roaming anymore.
Right.
But you definitely want to do the spay-neuter thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also more humane for the animals.
Oh, they're healthier that way.
Absolutely. And you don't want to see them out there starving and...
Right,
and,
right.
Or creating disease problems or anything. And
right.
That's happened a lot. In the past, I've seen them around town, and they're hard to catch. They're not very friendly.
No.
And... it's just all around a pretty major problem. So that's part of our bird problem too, is just loss of habitat and bringing in these other critters that are helping to take care of them. But if you can get some bird feeders out there or at least make a space to dump some, it's really not that expensive to do. You can go down to your local, almost anywhere, farm bureau.
Tractor supplies. Rural King.
Yep.
I think Walmart's got bird seed.
Oh yeah.
Also.
Yeah, or Lowe's or Menards, some of those places. So anyway, help them out, and you'll be happy to see them in your backyard as well. I've seen a few. We've got a couple of robins that we kind of watched all through the summer, and then we've got a. Some jays and some, all your regular ones. But it's really cool to have, just an awareness of what's out there. And so if you can, get out there and put some bird seed down.
Yeah, I tell you, Don really made me aware of this and got me to think about looking around. And I do notice that there's a lack.
Yeah.
Less. I'm really surprised, especially that you mentioned sparrows and finches. Mm-hmm. As I said, those are tough little birds. Usually we got more of them than you can count.
Right. Well, I tell you, it's a problem, but there are some ways to do some things about it. And in general, we want to be a good stewards of our environment, and you tend to forget when you let your cats out or whatever that's happening. So but anyway, I hear the music again. Looks like we're going to have to take a quick break, and I think Don's here now, so we'll be talking to Don Jordan here in just a minute. And in the meantime, you're listening to Inside Outdoors, and John, thanks for coming in this morning. We'll be right back.
Thank you for asking.
Listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
This is WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And hey, WFHB was created as an alternative to commercial radio. You're not going to hear those commercials that we all love so much. It allows a variety of volunteers to create programming and stuff like this, Inside Outdoors, that you listen to every week or on a daily basis. So here at Inside Outdoors, we really would like to see some new members. If you can become a contributing member of WFHB, give us a call at 812-323-1200. Call us right now. I've got a goal of getting a couple of new members, so if you like our show and you listen every week, give us a call. It doesn't really matter, you know, basically river. What you send, but we'd like you to be a make a contribution and keep things rolling. And also, if you're already a sustaining member and have joined our family of volunteers, please renew your membership by calling 812-323-1200 right now to keep these frequencies diverse and commercial free. So this is our fun drive this year, and in the fall we always do this. And so again, if you like our show, give us a call. Let me say hello to Don Jordan. Don, how you doing?
Well, I didn't even think about it last night. When I got up this morning, it was to the ringtone of my little cell phone with you calling me. And amazingly, that was about a few minutes before 7, and I got here in 20 minutes.
Yeah, that was
darn
good.
You made good time. You made good time.
I was praying that any of those cars behind me weren't police cars.
I try to do that this when I come in, too. So I got a little bit ahead of things and started talking about some birds, and I saw you had an article about cats, which was such a great thing to kind of think about as well. And but we kind of jumped through all that. The other thing that's going on this week is it's just a beautiful week. It's going to be in the 60s to right around 70 degrees most of the week, and might be a good time to start thinking about getting out there and doing some fishing.
Well, fishing can't be any worse. So I mean, unless you wanted to catch catfish, I mean, everybody that's been going that I've know of and talked to went out to catch panfish or bass or whatever and end up catching channel catfish. Now, there's nothing wrong with channel catfish. They're, you know, they fight good. They're pretty good to eat. You just don't want to eat a very big one.
Right.
Or you might have your toes turn into thermometers.
Well, I like catfish myself. My wife and I used to actually do a little night fishing trying to get catfish.
Yeah,
because we enjoyed eating them.
Well, they're good. Joe and I, my wife, were talking about it last night. I was kind of jonesing for the Porthole Inn down at Lake Lemon, where I used to go regularly before the old one burned down, and they have good either farm-raised cats. That's what everybody's got, and those are pretty small, and they're not full of anything bad or anything, and they're good to eat, and they know how to make them down there. And the other place is I think it's the Fairfax Bar. It's just outside of where you go into the Fairfax Recreation Area and the Four Winds down there. There's a little restaurant and bar sitting right outside before you go in there.
You mean the one with the big parking lot there?
Yeah, it's a great big parking lot.
Yeah.
They make good catfish, I hear. I've had their walleye. They sell walleye there, too. So if you want fish for dinner, that's probably the closest thing you can come to the real thing around here.
I've never been there. I'll try that.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's kind of out of the way. Of course, the porthole's even more out of the way.
But. Well, I like places that don't get overly packed up with crowds.
Yeah.
Well, that one there, I don't believe that Fairfax Bar gets packed.
I doubt it.
It has a lot of local business.
And there's probably some drive by, you know.
Right.
Well, I think I will go over and try that. I live fairly close, so it wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah,
if that one works out, that would be a good one.
Yeah, that would be pretty good for you. Real close to your neighborhood there.
Well, I went down to the Spillway the other day, and it's nice and quiet. Not much going on, just a little stream coming out of there.
Man, the water's low, isn't it?
Water looked kind of low, maybe just a little bit under. It's not too far under, but it's certainly not much going on out there.
Well, it's pretty slow. I'd say that this would be another good time to start fishing the creeks.
Yep.
You know, I haven't been on Indian Creek since the big interstate boondoggle highway got upon us, and you know, I'm afraid I'm going to find it covered with mud on the bottom. And that was the far and away the best stream fishing around here, really. It goes all the way from up by Hobbyville and down through that valley that runs over towards Crane, and then it runs down beside Crane and goes all the way down to Taylorsville. Now, actually, it keeps going from there, but that's the part to fish. And it used to be good. I'm not sure if it is anymore, but I hope it is. I'm sure there's guys still fishing it. You can float that when it's high enough. I'd say right now it's not high enough to float.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you thought that the streams would be down quite a bit, because I was just mentioning a little earlier, White River is really down.
Yes, it is. You can see a lot of rocks.
Yeah, a lot of sandbar coming across.
Sandbars and gravel bars. You might not want to take a powerboat down White River this time of year.
I wouldn't recommend it.
No, probably not.
Even a canoe is going to scratch bottom some, and that's hard on the boat. But there's other places to fish. I'm sure West Boggs is probably doing pretty good right now. And, well, we know Monroe. You know, you go to Monroe and you catch one fish, you're pretty good. You had a pretty good day. And it's probably a pretty small fish, unless you get a catfish. And boy, you can get some big, tie into some big ones of those. And no matter where you're fishing down there, really.
Yeah.
I don't want to discourage anybody from enjoying the outdoors, but I'd like to mention again that this Triple E and West Niles is very high risk this year. And I saw on the news the other night, they've even started aerial spraying in some areas, and they haven't done that, they said, for 40 years. And, of course, that's not going to help the wildlife population any either, especially birds, if they're going to be doing aerial spraying. They showed the plane spraying. So I'd say that's going to be something that goes on now. But this Triple E and even West Nile can be really hard on the humans.
Well, it can be. West Nile, of course, people do get that. And I suspect we probably get everything else, too. But there was a guy posted on Facebook this last week that had been out, got his deer on October the 1st with bow hunting. And he said he ran across one dead deer that day. Looked like it had died of blue tongue, which is that EHD, I guess, episodic hemorrhagic disease. and he'd found another one that same week when he was out scouting. So when one guy runs across two dead deer like that in a week,
it's not good.
Yeah, you know that it's happening. And by the way, have you guys talked about this? A lot of the fall hunting seasons are open or are opening this month.
Yeah.
And wild turkey is open right now. Fall archery, that's October the 1st to the 27th. Deer archery, October the 1st to January the 5th. Woodcock, which I don't think there are any woodcock around. I haven't seen
any. I haven't seen any.
I haven't seen any in years now, frankly. October 15th to November 28th. Red and gray fox, October 15th, February 28th. Coyote and striped skunk. Now, who want to shoot a skunk? October 15th, March the 15th. Turkey fall firearm season starts the 16th of October and runs the 27th. Now, we also got some waterfowl hunting open now. Or opening soon, I should say. Ducks, coots, and mergansers, October 19th, Central Zone, North Zone. Youth waterfowl only takes place down in the South Zone. That's October 26th and 27th. And, Canada geese, October 19th and November the 3rd. And the Central Zone, October 26th, November the 10th. It doesn't list the South Zone. Veteran waterfowl. Now, I don't know whether that means old waterfowl.
I don't know.
Or military veteran.
I don't understand that.
I don't know what the heck that means. But that opens October the 26th in the South Zone. Veteran waterfowl. So you get to hunt with the youth waterfowlers. Morning Dove will close October 20th. Dog running for raccoon and possum closes October 25th. So you can definitely get arrested for running your dogs out of season. So keep your nose clean on that. And don't dig any ginseng on somebody else's property, and make sure you're following all the rules on that, because there's been a numerous arrests on that this year.
Well, and this is about the time of year that people go looking for ginseng. Gosh, you know, ask permission or you know, look on a place where it's free to look. But again, we talk about this every year, but I wish they weren't allowing the commercial sale of it. It just seems to really wreck the whole possibility, because people just go out after it to sell and not to use for themselves. And this is beautiful ginseng. It's some of the best in the world.
Well, I've been, my friends out in Owen County, when I used to live over by Whitehall, practically, I wouldn't say there was that many of them, but a few of them dug ginseng out back in those days. That would have been in the 70s and 80s, early 80s. But it's become such a big deal now, they even got a television program about guys sneaking in on other people's land and encouraging this. And it's what's the difference between selling ginseng for profit and selling bluegills that you caught down at the lake for profit?
Right.
Which is illegal.
Right.
Well, it is a problem. If they've stepped up the enforcement that you mentioned of which properties you can be on, that'll probably help, but it won't stop.
No, ginsengers are kind of like morel hunters.
Right.
Know? They're going to park on the road behind you somewhere and come through the woods somewhere so they don't get seen.
Climb your back fence, across.
That's right, and... not all ginsengers do that, but, you know, I had, when people would come to my house and ask me if they could mushroom hunt, I would say yes, and I lived kind of way back in the woods, and a lot of people were scared to come back there.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of people that I saw by accident, you know, out looking for morels.
Right.
Ginseng hunting wasn't that big of a deal then, but it is now, and... a little ginseng lore here. Wild ginseng is much valued much higher than domestically grown ginseng. Even though you may dig up a live plant out in the woods and take it and put it in your backyard ginseng patch, you're going to cultivate that and water it and probably fertilize it, etc. And those plants will grow much faster and get much larger than the wild ones. But the guy who buys the ginseng knows that, and the ones that have been in the ground the longest have little tight rings on them, and they say it has more of the rare compounds that make ginseng worthwhile as a medical treatment than the domestic.
Well, it's probably more potent just because of the slower growth.
Well, that's exactly what they think and say. So, who am I to know? I don't know any difference.
I wouldn't know the difference. Well, now that you've described it, I might be able to tell two apart. But I never thought about it much. I don't hunt ginseng. I've got one little patch that I just watch grow, and I don't hunt it.
Well, if you do find ginseng and you want to pick it, and make sure it's in season, and it has these little berries on it, these little red berries. And if it does have those little red berries, make sure you put those back in the ground and cover them with some dirt, because that's what's going to make the ginseng grow there the next year.
Right. In fact, I did that in this patch that grows on my property.
Do they come up?
And I've got at least two or three new plants.
Oh, that's good.
I think you're right a lot about how slow it grows in the wild, and probably that's why the value is so high. But it doesn't grow quickly.
No, it's slow. And the Chinese being the big market for for this.
Right.
And I don't believe the president's put a tariff on ginseng. Probably wouldn't be hardly worthwhile.
He might not have thought of it yet, but he might get it done.
He might, but...
He probably listens to this show, so maybe he'll be...
Yeah, right. I'm sure. Well, you know, on the ginseng thing, once that ginseng, well, the dealers that buy it around here know this too. If you find a ginseng root that's in the shape of a human being, in other words, looks like it's got two arms and two legs, those are worth four or five times the amount of just a plain, straight old ginseng root because of the human likeness. Now, you know that that doesn't make any difference to, but it does to the Chinese, I guess. So.
Well, there's a myth that's been established that's going to hang on forever, because I've heard that story from anybody that hunts ginseng.
Yes, that's what they all say, you know, and they all prize anything that even looks like it might be an arm or a leg,
right.
You know. So there you have it on ginseng. I do have some advice from the DNR on the deer diseases. How much time we got? Can I go through this?
Oh, yeah, you got time.
Okay. During deer hunting season, DNR wants you to stay informed about these diseases we were just talking about. And they got some advice for practices in handling the carcass and other raw meat. Hello. We got time?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to take a break, but we'll have about 20 minutes after that. So
okay,
let's get back to it once we get done here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you guys carry on until the music quits.
All right. Well, we'd just like to say that we are Inside Outdoors, and we come to you every week on Saturday morning at 7 a.m., and really appreciate John coming in here this morning. Bill's not been feeling too well.
I'm sorry about that. I'm glad to be here, but I'm wishing him a quick recovery.
Yeah, he's got an issue with his knee, and we hope, that's a really terrible thing to have, because I've been through it the last few years myself. But anyway, we hope to see him soon. And in the meantime, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
This is WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org. And WFHB was created as an alternative to commercial radio. We are community radio, and that allows us to do all kinds of creative programming like you're listening to today. So if you like Inside Outdoors, you know, we try to let you know all that's going on in your community and the outdoors. And so if you like what you hear every Saturday morning, we invite you to become a new contributing member of our WFHB community. Make a contribution. Let us know. You can call 812-323-1200 right now to keep those frequencies diverse and commercial-free. In the meantime, you're listening to Inside Outdoors, and we shall be right back.
It ain't a bunch of beans they serve in the Navy.
Uh-uh.
It's bacon and eggs, biscuits and gravy. Biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs, whole pot of coffee down to the dregs. When I get out of bed, my belly aches for biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs. That's biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs.
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw is right. Give me some of that biscuits and gravy and bacon and eggs. Yes, sir. Beans. No beans.
No beans.
No beans like they serve in the Navy.
No, well, I never preferred beans in the morning anyway.
Well, that makes for a pretty gassy day. Okay, well, we were talking about this DNR advice on these diseased deer. The main thing, there are two main things they're talking about here, is this Epizootic hemorrhagic disease, been confirmed in several counties in central and southern Indiana. And as a result of that, this is the reason why they reduced the antlerless permits for this season, and maximum of two. Natural occurring virus transmitted by an insect, a biting midge. You know what a midge is? It's a tiny little black fly, a no-see-em, you know?
Yeah, nasty.
Yeah, they'll make you itch. EHD does not affect humans. Deer infected with EHD are safe to eat. Oh, boy. yeah. And outdoor temperatures begin to drop, the risk of EHD will lessen as the midges drop off to freezing. Bovine tuberculosis is a bacterial disease that can affect cattle, deer, and other mammals, including humans. So it is not believed to be established in Indiana's wild deer herd. However, DNR recommends that hunters continue to inspect harvested deer for white or tan lesions on internal organs or the inner wall of the deer's chest cavity. So when you're dressing these deer out, look for those spots. If lesions are found, hunters should contact Indiana State Board of Animal Health veterinarian by calling 877-747-3038. I don't know what you're going to tell you there. The other disease, of course, that we're all worried about and we haven't got yet is CWD, chronic wasting disease. And it's a fatal neurological disease affecting white-tailed deer, mule deer, elk, and moose. Well, the only one we have here is white-tailed deer. CWD, the virus that, it's a prion, actually, is shed in bodily fluids like feces, saliva, blood, or urine. This is what makes it so dangerous for deer coming out of deer farms,
right.
And these canned hunting places, because those deer congregate in the same place all the time and leave their various bodily fluids more concentrated than others, and then the deer eat the grass, pull up a little dirt with it, and they got CWA.
Now, isn't it true that they kind of blame the beginning of this disease around here from the farms?
Well, there was some that escaped over southeast Indiana someplace. So if there are any around here, that's probably where they came from. But there hasn't been any indication that it's caught on here, thank goodness. But, you know, it popped up way out in Colorado and Montana, the first of it, and it's been working its way east ever since, and it's in 30-some states now, and it just seems really kind of strange that it hasn't come across the west from Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan.
Does it affect humans at all?
Well, it certainly can it's basically the same disease as mad cow disease, which, you know, they killed all those cattle in Britain, and it's the same as this kuru disease that those cannibals in New Guinea had, and, you know, it has a lot of the same symptoms as...
the mad cow disease.
Well, what's the thing that... You know, humans lose their memory, Alzheimer's. See, I got a little of it already. It's Alzheimer's. It has a lot of same symptoms as that. So
that's a terrible disease, Alzheimer's.
It could be that, you know, they're not looking for CWD in humans. And it's about time they start doing some postmortems on people who die of Alzheimer's to see if they might have CWD instead of Alzheimer's, and it's a certain death. There's nothing you can do about it.
No, it's just a little personal note here. My wife passed away with Alzheimer's.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And she suffered with it for quite a number of years. I actually retired to care for her, and after 10 years, I had to move her to the health campus, and then she made it about another 3.5. And it's a terrible disease and a waste of a real good life.
It is. It's not good. So the Board of Animal Health wants you to limit the move of cervid carcasses and body parts, especially from out of state. And if you hunt in Indiana, follow the carcass transportation regulations for deer in your home state, as well as the regulations in Indiana. Here's, they got some points here. Commercially processed meat which may contain bone. That's where you might find it. Carcasses or parts of carcasses if no portion of the head, spinal cord, or small intestine is attached. So you can take the carcass without the head, without the spinal cord, or the small intestine. That's a regular operation.
That's starting to get a little bit technical for me.
Carcasses or parts of carcasses that include the head, spinal cord, small, if they are delivered within 72 hours after entry to one of the following: a meat processor inspected by Board of Health, a commercial deer processor registered with DNR, a taxidermist licensed by the DNR. That's where you can take those. Antlers, including those attached to skull caps, if the skull cap is cleaned of all brain and muscle tissue, you can transport that. Hides, a lot of people do want those. Upper canine teeth, also known as bugler, whistlers, or ivories.
Right, now I don't think whitetail's got much of that.
Probably not. Yeah. Finished taxidermy mounts could be carrying CHD. Regardless of the harvest, hunters and trappers should adhere to the following best practices. Wear disposable gloves. Wash your hands after you're done. Clean and disinfect instruments after use. Don't handle or consume wild animals that appear sick or act abnormal. Cook meat thoroughly. Minimize contact with brain or spinal tissues of the animal. Report sick to the DNR.
So, there's a lot going on about this deer disease, I tell you.
Well, there are so many deer
that
it could be a major thing if it got out of hand.
Well, I kind of quit deer hunting when my wife became ill, because she was my partner and we did our own butchering, and it sounds like we're well to be out of that.
Well, it sounds like you are. But, so many people hunt deer in Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
And, speaking of that, there's already been a couple of tree stand incidents in Indiana, both of them up in northern Indiana. But this happens every year. I don't believe anybody's been killed yet, but it about happens every year. So when you put that tree stand up, make sure you got a safety strap on of some kind, harness or something. So when you do fall, you don't fall all the way around.
Right.
And don't carry your gun up in the tree with you, or your bow and arrow, especially your bow and arrow, because if you fall with a
broadhead
arrow in your hand or in your pack or somewhere.
Even if it's in a quiver, you happen to land on it.
If you happen to land on it, you're going to get stuck. And there have been a death or two of that happening.
I can believe that.
So
I never liked the tree stand myself, but I have friends that use them.
Well, I've never been up in one either. It looks dangerous to me. Most guys that I know used to use tree ground stands. You just get a big log and maybe put a net over it and kind of camouflage a little bit.
Right.
And sit there on the ground and wait for the deer to come by.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, you'll see one. If you're not, you won't see one.
Yeah, I had a cover like that that I could just throw around anything or on myself. And it was a camo with frills, and it was pretty neat. When you put it out a ways away and looked at it, you couldn't hardly see it.
Yeah, like a ghillie suit?
Yeah, sort of like that. Not that fancy, but...
Yeah, those were developed by snipers, military snipers, and they do work,
They just disappear.
If you don't want to be seen, that's what you ought to get. They're kind of expensive. Of course, you can make one on your own. I don't know how...
Yeah.
good of a seamstress you'd have to be. Probably do a lot of sewing on one of those.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Gee, what else is going on? Of course, the you know, we don't have Upland game season. Doesn't start till November. It used to be November 7th in a year. I think it's moved back to the 16th this year, maybe. But I'm not sure. So we have some other things going on. I think today is the Lake Monroe cleanup, isn't it?
I think that's what you said last week, if I remember correctly.
There's also one going on down at Patoka Lake. That'd be a good thing to participate in. You meet some new people, have a little bit of fun, do some good. Of course, you know, it's kind of discouraging when you're out there picking up beer cans and whatnot to look up the creek and know that they're going to be, those hills up in there are going to be bare of trees before too long because the Forest Service up Middle Fork is cutting 4,000 acres.
I found an article that I had saved out of the paper way back in March talking about how much we've sold as a government and how little we've gotten out of it.
Oh, yeah, we give it away.
Yeah.
Give it away.
That's the point of that article. I was going to bring it in. I'm sure you've already read it or one like it, but it sounds like we're selling out for dime on the dollar.
Oh, you know? It's probably worse than the dime on the dollar. Yeah. I saw one stat saying that they were selling these giant poplar trees for 18 cents. 18 cents a tree.
For the tree?
For the whole tree. And at the same time, on the local and the state forests, we pay for the logging roads. And we actually, through federal government, we end up paying for the logging roads they put in for the U.S. Forest Service cuts. And they have to make a road big enough for two logging trucks to pass on. And it has to be so hard and so much gravel, et cetera, et cetera. So they're not cheap. It costs us more to sell these trees than we ever retrieve in income.
I don't understand how activists haven't been able to get the government to stop doing that.
Well, you know, back in, gosh, it was in the 70s, I guess, when they were, there was a lot of stuff going on down here at the Hoosier National Forest. There were protesters, you know. There was this old guy named Harry Hollis, who dressed up with a paper bag over his entire body and had sayings written all over it and whatnot. And that was down by the water tower, down by, or the fire tower.
Did they have any effect?
They did at the time. And there was some progress made, and they did. Then Mayor McCloskey went down. Well, it was after he was mayor, and he was Congressman McCloskey. Went down to check out some of the clear cuts, and he came out saying it looked like Apocalypse Now. Most of the people who were around remember that. And it did look like it had been devastated. It had been devastated. But that has all gone by the wayside since then. And we're right back to where we were back 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Well, my 6 acres is bordered by about 25 or 30 acres of county woods, and it's really rough terrain, and so there's not a lot of activity in that woods, and I just kind of consider it as my backyard. And it's been timbered 3 times in the last 45 years that I've been there, but evidently, we've lucked out and hired the right companies, because after they're done, you can look down through the woods. It doesn't look a lot different, and in 2 or 3 years, you can't even tell they did it.
Well, that's I guess they're not clear cutting.
No.
Well.
No, it's not clear cut. They even leave some fairly large trees on the border side of my land, just because they know that's the border. And I go down and talk to the loggers, and I always compliment them on the way they do business. But I'm sure that didn't gain me any points. But
it might have. You never know.
They take good care of the woods.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with adjoining property owners going out to the crews and bringing them some ice water.
Right.
Strike up a little conversation with them and tell them where your property line is.
Yeah.
And you know where it is.
Yeah.
As they, you know, they like to cut that rubber 40, as they used to say. And
well, they do put a logging trail in, and you know, they do a little destruction, but it's sure nothing much.
Hey guys, we're at the end of our show, and I do want to thank someone for calling in. We had two callers. One we couldn't get to. We'll get to next week. You want to talk about herons, but also I want to thank Donna Browning, who called in to donate. On behalf of Inside Outdoors, and we appreciate that. Somebody will give you a call back.
Thanks, Donna.
And I do appreciate that. So we made our goal today, and I appreciate it.
Cool. That's good news.
All right. Yes, well, thanks, you guys, for coming in, and we'll see you all next week.
Inside Outdoors.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.
So thanks everybody for listening and tuning in this morning, and so we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.